passion and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
This might be college football heaven.
Back, second hour is live. Thanks so much for being here. And we have a very special guest, Brad Crawford, joining us from 24/7. And he will help us better understand college football and maybe make us all a little bit smarter. Brad, thank you for dropping in. It's been a while.
Paul, good to see you. I think the last time we hung out together was in Nashville at SC Media Days.
You're right. And you're writing about a number of things, including quarterbacks right now. You reshuffle the decks every week, which is really the way you're supposed to do it. So tell us what is happening from a quarterback situation in the SEC. Who's looking good?
After four games and nearing the end of September here, Paul, I've got Spencer Rattler at number one. He's having an incredible season, final season in Columbia. I think it's been hidden by the fact a bit the Gamecocks are 2-2, losses in that opener to UNC, and then on the road at Georgia, very tough game. But Rattler's been extremely efficient in this new Dow Loggins offense, pro-style scheme, and he's done it without Juice Wells, one of the SEC's top wideouts last season. Not much of a running game to speak of, in an offensive line that's yielded a bunch of sacks. So at a position in the SEC with mixed results so far across the league, Rattler's been elite, and I think right now he's the clear-cut number one at the position.
Yeah, he has played well. Obviously, that was expected, but consistency was really the issue. I want to go through this as you have them ranked. Number two is not a big surprise at all, Jaden Daniels. He was one of the two or three that everybody thought would be at or near the top. What do you see from him?
Yeah, Jaden Daniels has had a really good year so far. Really played decent in that opener against Florida State despite that loss. You know, had a touchdown pass late in that game. But, I mean, the last 2 weeks he's been killing it. Probably one of the best quarterbacks in the country these last two games against Mississippi State. Had a couple of long touchdown passes to Malik Nabers in Starkville. And then last week, you know, that comeback victory against Arkansas at night in Baton Rouge. So we sort of knew what Jaden Daniels was, Paul, coming into the year. But it's a little bit of a surprise that Rattler has played so well, and he's banked off that finish in 2022.
You have Dart third, Connor Wegman fourth, and Brady Cook fifth. As far as Connor Wegman, he's hurt. We're not 100% sure what his availability or status is going to be. But Max Johnson came in and really played quite well. What about that situation if Wegman is hurt for an extended period?
Yeah, over the weekend, Auburn didn't tackle too well in College Station at Kyle Field against A&M. You know, the Aggies won that game 27-10. And like you said, because of Max Johnson's arm, he's obviously got starting experience in the SEC, has played well at LSU before. And now if they lose Wegman for, you know, an extended period of time, Jimbo Fisher said yesterday he's day-to-day. You know, that might be coach speak. We don't know really how hurt Connor is right now. So it's a pivotal next few games for A&M. Beginning Saturday at AT&T Stadium against Arkansas. Arkansas back-to-back losses coming in. A&M has that lone loss to Miami. So if Jimbo Fisher, you know, plans on playing for an SEC West title this season, that's really a must-win game in Arlington on Saturday.
Brad, a couple of quarterbacks that are ranked in the second part of your list. The one that people keep talking about is Joe Milton. Nobody was 100% sure before the season what to expect. What are you seeing from him? And what does he need to change?
So the good news for Joe Milton is he plays a defense Saturday night in Knoxville in South Carolina that ranks at the bottom of the SEC right now in several categories. I mean, Will Rogers, Mississippi State quarterback, in a pro-style scheme, just threw for 487 on the Gamecocks. I think Joe Milton right now, his confidence is shaken a bit. You know, he has a couple new wide receivers that he's still trying to build a rapport with. But this is, you know, maybe a show-me, get-right game against the Gamecocks, especially after the Vols lost last season at Williams-Brice. So I'm expecting a pretty big game Saturday night from Joe Milton, a guy that I had ranked much higher in August than I have now.
Brad, let's talk about the quarterback battle in Kentucky, noon start, critical game. We got Mertz, who we had a chance to visit with yesterday, Leary, who we had a chance to visit with last week. What do you make out of those two?
This is a battle of the don't turn it overs at the quarterback position. I think 7 combined interceptions between Graham Mertz, the Wisconsin transfer for the Gators, and Devin Leary, the NC State transfer, who 2 years ago, Paul, had 35 touchdowns and 5 picks. He ain't getting those kind of numbers this season. But Kentucky is undefeated, and they're a 2.5-point favorite Saturday. I probably lean Kentucky in that game, but it's a matchup of quarterbacks that, like I said, you can't make mistakes in this game. I think it'll be a typical black and blue type Mark Stoops versus Billy Napier game, and probably whichever offense, you know, runs the football with precision, is able to convert third downs, wins a low-scoring, ugly game.
Brad, the Alabama quarterback situation is settled. Jalen Milroe makes mistakes, but he also makes big plays. How do you evaluate him, and what do you think is the Tide's chances as we move toward the middle of the season?
I like what I saw in the second half from Jalen on Saturday against Ole Miss in that game, throwing that long touchdown pass to the freshman. And that came after he threw into double coverage and threw that interception in the corner of the end zone. You can make mistakes in Nick Saban's offense, but you can't do it inside the opposition's 20-yard line. You can't have red zone turnovers. And Bama's a team that, you know, plays in Mississippi State at Starkville Saturday night. That's a game Bama should win. But if Miro has a couple errors or giveaways in the passing game, Mississippi State could possibly win that game. So I like Alabama, but Jalen Milroe right now, as you mentioned, I think he has separated himself from Ty Simpson and Tyler Buckner, because those two guys, Paul, we've already seen what they can do on the field, and was not pretty.
Missouri has Vanderbilt. Everyone seems to be comfortably beating Vanderbilt, but after that, it really gets more difficult. I mentioned Brady Cook's injury. He's been banged up. Burden's been banged up. But should we take this Missouri program seriously this year, or do you think they have just gotten by so far?
I think Missouri is worthy of a top 25 spot in the AP poll right now, based on who they've beaten. You know, beating a previously unbeaten Memphis team, defending Big 12 champion Kansas State. They hung on to beat Middle Tennessee. It says something about Eli Drinkwitz's team that can execute in the fourth quarter late in games and come out with wins. We haven't seen that much out of Missouri under Eli's tenure, and they're doing that this season. I'm surprised they're 4-0 going into the first SEC game against Vanderbilt. So quarterback matchup there, Brady Cook, you know, he was kind of battling Horn for that starting job going into September. He has separated himself there. And then A.J. Swan, 7 interceptions. He's banged up a little bit. I think Ken Seals, Vandy's backup quarterback, is going to see some action this weekend.
Right before you go, I thought about the overwhelming favorite, Georgia, the number one team in the country. They're a very quiet school so far. They're playing at Auburn. This should be a big game. People talking about it all over the country. Quite frankly, that is not the case. What do you make out of the Dogs?
Yeah, it seems like Hugh Freeze and his comments this week have sort of dumbed this game down a bit. Maybe Hugh knows something that we don't know about Saturday. Maybe his defense will play really well. But this is Georgia's first real test. No disrespect to South Carolina, but they came into Sanford Stadium as about a 26.5-point underdog in that game. Georgia was going to always win that game. Now you go to Jordan-Hare. Jordan-Hare, every now and then for top five opponents, is very difficult to play at. It's going to be loud there, you know, Saturday afternoon. And this is Carson Beck's first real test as well. He's going to have 90,000 fans that hate him, Paul, screaming in his ear. So if Carson Beck throws an early pick in that game, Georgia's officially on upset alert.
Ooh, Brad Crawford laying down some juicy material here for the fans. Thank you, Brad. Great to see you, Brad Crawford, joining us from 24/7 as we head to the break right now. Your phone calls around the corner at 855-242-7285.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Caller, as we say hello to you, has been calling us for years. He's taken a lot of heat, and his team now is making some noise. Manuel in Austin, good afternoon.
What's going on, Paul Feinbaum?
Manuel, I thought of you the other day. We flew out of Austin coming back from Texas A&M. I said, man, I wonder if Manuel would have us over for a margarita.
Oh, man, anytime you come over, anytime you're down here, man, you just give me a holler. I know you're coming down for the Texas-Georgia game next year, ain't you?
Oh, yeah, I will be there a million times over the next couple of years.
100%, man. I can't wait. I'm ready for that, Paul. Look, Paul, man, I didn't call you last week. I'm going to tell you why. Because I want to let the haters see for themselves what Bama was going to do to Ole Miss. Because all I've been hearing since Texas beat Bama is about how Bama's down, Bama ain't any good, Nick Saban's on his way to retirement, and that is a bunch of bull jive. There ain't nothing wrong with Bama. They simply got beat by a better team that day. But the reality of it is, this is really the same Bama that we've always seen. I mean, they got a few issues. They got, you know, like 2016 Bama issues. They got offensive issues with, you know, lackluster quarterback play or what have you. But aside from that, it's the same Bama team that Nick Saban's always put together. They got the best talent. They got some of the best players, and they're still whooping butt all over the place. They're still whooping teams like Ole Miss. And that's one thing that, you know, you have to commend Nick Saban for, because Nick Saban, what makes him great is the fact that he's been able to adapt and make changes when he's needed them, with, you know, bringing guys like Lane Kiffin in, bringing guys like Steve Sarkisian in. Now, he's about to go 0-2 after replacing Sark. He replaced him with an old boy from the Texans, and that didn't work out very well. And I don't know if this dude from Notre Dame is going to work out either, but that's one thing that George is going to find out. The reason sustained success is so hard is because when you start having it and you start losing guys like Dan Lanning, Todd Monken, now you got Mike Bobo in there. That Mike Bobo experiment, I'm not sure it's going to work out. You know, Georgia, they kind of underachieving this year. I mean, they kind of under the radar because they're not really that good. They really don't want the smoke, to be honest with you, Paul. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think everything you said is certainly it's certainly debatable. I have some concerns about Georgia, but I have more about Alabama.
Yeah, well, they got to get that quarterback situation. You know, he's just inexperienced. He'll be fine. It'll be a thing for next year for them. But I'll be honest with you, Paul. So far, you know, I mean, if we were in the SEC, would we be running it already? Would we be the best team in the SEC already?
You're trending up at the right time, because the worst thing that could have happened was limping into the SEC next year.
Like Oklahoma?
Well, check back with me in about a week and a half.
They definitely limping, that's for damn sure.
What do you think's going to happen at? What do you think's going to happen in Dallas?
Oh man, we might let them score maybe 6 or 7. We might spot them 6 or 7. It's going to be like 49-6 or 7, something like that.
You guys going to get by the Jayhawks this weekend?
That's a tougher matchup than Oklahoma.
Yeah, I think you're right. This is a really good game.
That's going to be, listen, Paul, this week right here, there's a hell of a coach. That guy might end up at Oklahoma, you know, if Venables don't get his stuff together.
I think Leipold could be a pretty prominent school next year or the year after.
100%. And look, Paul, one last thing. These folks from, this dude from San Antonio, you know, your boy Matt. I just feel bad for him, man. We spotted him 10 years. We gave him a 10-year head start in the SEC. And it's looking very apparent to me that we about to come in there and end up in the SEC championship game before Texas A&M does. That's just sad. They Missouri ain't done nothing in the SEC, like you said earlier, but they've done more than Texas A&M. They've at least played in the SEC championship. So my boys down at College Station, come on, man. Bring your game up. Get your game together, because you're looking mighty sad.
Manuel, great to hear from you. Manuel joining us from Austin. Bubba in North Carolina.
Bub. What's shaking, Paul? What's going on, Randy, you old carpet bagger? Hey, don't y'all pick on Larry too hard. Y'all know the fourth grade was the three hardest years of that old boy's life now. Hey, now let me tell you something, Manuel. You come on down to the SEC next year, you're going to find out who the real UT is, big boy. And as far as Alabama being the same Alabama, I don't think so, pal. Paul, let me ask you this. When's the last time you saw Alabama come out and bludgeon a team for four quarters in all three phases of the game and literally take their will to even play football by the end of the first quarter? How long has it been, Paul? Be honest with me.
I saw it one time last year, against Mississippi State, and maybe even not even the whole game, but certainly the second half. And
exactly. They beat Ole Miss Saturday. The only thing they proved Saturday is they don't suck as bad as Ole Miss. Come on, people. This is not your dad's Alabama. I used to watch Alabama just literally stomp people in the ground in the first 10 minutes of the ball game. They don't do that anymore, Paul. And you know well as I do, they've been in a lot of close football games the last two or three years. And even if you look at the analytics, if you want to go that route, if you play in enough close football games, you're going to lose some football games. So Alabama, I know Legend was fired up. We're back. Yeah, you're back to winning the SEC football game, but I'm telling you guys, it's not the same old Alabama. I hate to break the news to you.
Well, that's disappointing. I was led to believe it was.
Well, Paul, you're playing both sides of the fence as usual.
I rely on a handful of people, and my Alabama guys are Larry and Legend, and they both.
You know they're drinking that freaking Kool-Aid, man. But the Kool-Aid has got watered down. I'm telling you, it used to be red Kool-Aid. It's barely pink now. So it's a watered down Alabama. Nick Saban don't have that sharp edge to him no more. You even said he seemed like he was softer and more genteel than he'd ever been. I agree. He's gotten older.
That was a long time ago I said that, Bubba, like a week ago Tuesday.
Yeah, exactly. But it's the truth, Paul. If people don't want to hear it. But, you know, you think Nick would put up with all the stuff he puts out these players nowadays five years ago?
Absolutely not. Nick Saban has done what every coach has had to do, and they're babying their players now.
Exactly, and now his football team is suffering because of it competitively.
Doesn't seem to have hurt Kirby Smart.
Like I said, Manuel, you come on with your little Texas Longhorns, big boy. See y'all.
Yeah, I can't. I wish Texas could just come in the SEC the second half of the season. I like that Manuel Bubba battle. Jason in Georgia. Good afternoon, Jason. How are you?
Doing good. How you doing, Bob?
We're doing great. Thank you.
Hey, just want to ask you, everybody's calling for Nick Saban's head about a week ago. They didn't look that bad against Ole Miss. You think they're back?
Well, possibly.
I'm a big dog fan. I'll go ahead and tell you.
Okay. Woof.
I'm questionable about the dogs on the road this week against Auburn, even though Auburn didn't look that good against A&M. It
looked horrible.
Defense didn't look very good at all. What's your thoughts on that game?
I respect Auburn. I've been to that stadium a million times and seen big upsets. I don't think that there's any chance of it happening this week. I don't think Auburn can match up with Georgia. I mean, Georgia, to me, has still not shown much this year, but they are close to it. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Donnie in Georgia. Good afternoon.
Hey, can you hear me?
I sure can.
So, the Heisman deal, I think Brock Bowers should be in there on the Heisman. And you got a lot more tight ends. I think we need to get the quarterback
to break.
Well,
here's the problem, Donnie. I mean, you have to – I'm with you in terms of his ability, but the Heisman doesn't start for a while. And right now I don't think Brock Bowers would be a serious candidate at the moment because all the quarterbacks, primarily from – the Pac-12 and a few other places are making all the noise. But that changes once he needs to get into some big games. And I don't see him being in a big game until November. So he is going to be at a disadvantage for a long time. Thanks for the call. Dalton is in Georgia. Hey, Dalton.
I just want to ask, who in the SEC could beat Florida State right now if they get the run game going?
Who in the... I know. I'm not going to tell you LSU. Georgia right now would be my only pick as they could go toe to toe with Florida State.
And if they got the run game going, what would you predict the score be for that game?
Well, I mean, circumstances. Where's the game? What are the circumstances? I think Florida State's playing at a very high level right now, but they barely got by a better than average Clemson team. So don't forget that.
Yes, sir. That's the run game not working for them.
No, so they're going to need to clear that up. Hey, thanks for the call. We're up against a break. More to come. We have Matt Stinch come a little bit later on. We've had a number of guests already, and we're coming back after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Apparently, Manuel upset a few people. The newbie in the SEC next year. Brad is in Georgia. Brad, thank you. Good afternoon.
Hey, Mr. Paul Feinbaum, how are you?
Well, thanks for calling.
Yes, sir. You know, one thing that irritates me is somebody calling from another conference that'll be in our conference that's won really one game, who hadn't won their own conference championship, and I can't even remember the last time Texas won a conference championship out there in the Big 12.
About 15 years ago.
Well, there you go. Well, you know, all that smack talk, go ahead and smack talk. You did get a good win. You get some credit for that. But see, in the SEC, is it Manuel?
Manuel, yeah.
The guy's name? Manuel, we played three phases of the game. Special teams, offense, and defense. Big 12 plays two, offense and special teams. They don't know anything about defense. So when you come over to the SEC, and Georgia will be coming out there, they'll pay you a little visit next year. We'll see what you got then. But you better learn how to play some defense. So I can tell you, because every game you play in the SEC, whereas right now you got to win one or two games, you're going to have to play every week. And we're going to beat you up, and you're going to get injuries. And we're going to see how good you are then when your depth goes down to nothing. And you won't even be in the playoff. And I predict you won't win the SEC for another 10 or 15 years. What do you think about that, Paul?
Well, I like what you said, Brad. Thank you for calling. I was trying to be a little more hospitable since our new neighbors, but I'm down with what you said. Sandy is in West Virginia. Hello, Sandy.
Yes, I want to talk about Nick Saban.
Okay.
You know, I know he's from West Virginia, and I know that.
Sure is.
But I like him as a coach. I don't say I like the Alabama team myself. I mean, they're a good team. They should be good. When you get five-star recruits, you better be good. But there's a lot of people that really want Nick Saban's job, and there's been a couple people mentioned. But I think Alabama, when they replace Nick Saban, they're going to want somebody that has the same type of character that Nick Saban has, that carries himself well like Nick Saban does. And I think that person today, from what I have seen from other coaches, is Marcus Freeman. You know, you may disagree, but that's,
well,
you know,
I have great respect for Marcus. And he's a very engaging personality. He's yet to prove himself as a coach, though.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But
oh, yeah.
But, Sandy, assuming Marcus Freeman is successful at Notre Dame, he went to Ohio State and he's been at Notre Dame, why would he consider Alabama?
Well, why do you think, what's his name? It took LSU.
Brian Kelly.
Why did he leave Notre Dame to go to LSU?
Well, that's true, but he was also a man in his 60s who had achieved a great deal at Notre Dame, played for the championship, made the playoffs a couple of times, and I think he was looking for one last hurrah, and he's getting it. Marcus Freeman's still a guy, I think he's in his 30s. But if he's successful I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't answer that question, but
yeah, I think Alabama will look for a coach that has some of the qualities of character that Nick Saban does. And I think that, you know, they want somebody to represent them well.
Well, they need that because they hired a couple of losers leading up to Saban, and they got it right with Coach Saban. Thank you very, very much for the call. I mean, they hired one guy that never got to the first game. That's not good. Goes out, loses his credit card, ends up in an awkward spot at a strip club. He never won a game, but he had a big night in Pensacola. I mean, he had a night we'll never forget. I don't even know if he's still alive, but he probably won't forget that night. Red Hammer is up next. Red?
Hello.
Yes.
Can you hear me?
That would be yes, I can.
Good. Look, I'm a long-time watcher of the show.
Well, thank you.
And I have been an avid football fan for something like 75 years. So my call is, I watched the orange and white game at Tennessee.
Okay.
And this Graham boy looked very good, Graham Moore. And there was a really good article in Sports Illustrated about him.
Yes.
And my question is I haven't heard any more from him. I don't really see nothing in the newspapers. And you know, in that game, in the orange-white game, they used Milton, who didn't look very good. And he came in, and the Moore boy looked very well, scored a touchdown. Later on, they put him in for Nick. For the white team, he looked very good and scored a touchdown. And
Red, let me, I mean, I know his name. I will see if I can find out more about him, and I'll get back to you on that. Thanks for the call. Appreciate that very, very much. Jerry is also from the Volunteer State. Good afternoon, Jerry.
Hey, Paul, he's same question. If South Carolina beats Tennessee, are they going to replace Joe Milton? And will it be Nico or will it be Gaston Moore, who did really well in the orange-white game?
If South Carolina wins this game, I don't want to think about Monday for Tennessee. It's going to be a manic Monday.
Well, I think that if they were to lose this game, it's a good possibility that they may not meet their expectations.
Well, no, they will not be meeting their expectations. Let me get it, because they still have an endless number of difficult games like Alabama, Georgia, Texas A&M.
Yeah.
And I'm sure I'm missing a couple. But
other question for you. And that relates, I have to express that I do not have any confidence in Tommy Reese as the offensive coordinator. And I see most of the problems that Saban's having as they're self-inflicted, because if he would have fired Golding, he possibly could have had another national championship. And he had a good opportunity to fire Golding when he got a DUI. Because basically, I think that's a fireable offense now. But the problem, when I look at Tommy Reese's background, there's nothing that stands out there. And what I wonder about, they've got an assistant head coach that does the receivers that's been there 4 years. Why Saban had to know that O'Brien was leaving. Why didn't he tell this kid that was on his staff, go become a sponge? And learn as much
Jerry,
as
there, one thing you said is 100% true. I mean, Nick Saban and Bill O'Brien are contemporaries. Everyone in the NFL knew O'Brien was going back to be with Belichick. So when you factor in that Saban and Belichick are best friends, that was going to happen. So he had plenty of time to prepare for the offense. What I think he did not anticipate is being turned down by a couple of people, and that did happen.
Oh, well, see, that's something that you have privy to, and I think that's another thing I've picked up on your show, is that you have information and that you don't always reveal, and it's probably because they've asked you not to reveal that information. Now, if it comes up, then you probably at some point revealed.
Yeah, well, what you just said, I mean, it's much easier to have a conversation like I just did with you and give you something that maybe I never reported than to just blurt that out on some tweet. I'm not a reporter like a lot of these guys. I'm not trying to get hits on Twitter. My job is to be here every day and try to make this show into something great, and I've failed miserably.
Yeah. Well, I would just say that if it were my choice, and that kid, I say he's not a kid, but he's assistant head coach, I'd go and walk Tommy Rees out the building and hand the keys over to this other kid.
Well, the most amazing thing, though, Jerry, is that not only did Saban bring in Tommy Rees, whatever choice he was, it matters not, he then just embraced him. I remember we were on the set in Nashville, and Coach Saban came up there, and I asked him about Tommy Rees, and he said, man, I love Tommy Rees. I mean, I thought he was talking about, you know, like a new son-in-law. He was effusive, and I've never heard him talk about a coach like that. Hey, thanks for the call. We're up against the break. More to come, more of your phone calls, more guests. We're back after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We're having just a nice, quiet afternoon, and we'll continue that right now. Let's go to AC.
Mr. Feinbaum, how are you feeling, sir? Thank you very much for taking my call.
Very well.
Absolutely. I'm pretty sure you're having a busy college football season. If I'm not mistaken, your boy toy, your golden boy, Legend, so he's having some sort of radio show on Saturday. Am I correct?
He's on a local television show in Birmingham.
That's right. I mean, he could make it to SEC. I mean, he could do something with you on SEC Network on Saturdays. He could have, but he's not going to. He's a failure. He's a loser. What Jim calls him, a legion? I don't know what legion means. I know what loser means. I know the definition of loser. I know Jim is having a great time. I'm bashing Legend. But here's the thing, Jim. You're the biggest loser of them all.
Be careful what I say around Legend. If I were you, AC. He's East Coast, baby. Jason is up next.
Wow.
Jason is up next. Good afternoon.
Yes. Hey, Paul. How you doing?
Jason.
Long-time watcher.
Thank you.
Glad to be able to talk to you. My thing is all these people that are wanting Nick Saban's head because we've had a down season and you know, things aren't looking all that great. I'm just like, for 16 years, I think Alabama fans have just gotten spoiled. And I'm one of the biggest Alabama fans you'll meet. I mean, you can't be on top every year. And, I mean, who are you going to put in there? Really?
Well, here's the problem, though, Jason. Alabama has been on top at some point every year. And are you aware that since 2008, at some point in the season, sometimes it's been the final day, but it really doesn't matter, Alabama has been ranked number one in the country. And this year, they're not even close.
I understand that. But, you know, I go back to, you know, you can't win every year as much as we'd like to. I mean, it'd be nice to have a championship every year.
Sure would.
But, I mean.
And Alabama has been providing that every year.
You're right. You are definitely right about that. And I hope our season goes a lot better. But I just cannot see, and I know Saban's age and all that, but look, the man, he's the GOAT for the reason, you know?
Jason,
I think
you're right.
We just got to give him time.
I think it's the people that are going after him from a feeling of permanence are few and far between. I think we all accept and recognize what he's done. And because of that standard, and he said it, when you play for 9 national championships in a finite period of time, when you've been an underdog, I think twice in 16 years, fans are going to get spoiled, and nobody knows that better than him. And I say this jokingly, but it's his fault. He set the bar so high. So yeah, there's always going to be frustration. The level of frustration 2 weeks ago and last week was higher than I've ever heard it. But today you don't hear that anymore. It just takes a successful Saturday to calm football fans down. Will is in Kansas City. Good afternoon.
Hey, Paul. How you doing today?
We're doing great.
Nice. I'm going to throw you a little curveball, send you to the Pac-12 here. I'm a big Utah fan. I live here in the Midwest. And, man, it was super frustrating having the beginning of the season come and Cam Rising wasn't ready to go. Seems like every week, you know, we're kind of teased a little bit like he's coming back. And I'd say about the last 3 weeks we get stuck with Bryson Barnes or Nate Johnson. So I guess my question to you is, you know, one, have you heard anything floating around out there that maybe Cam's coming back in the next few weeks? And then we've got a pretty big slate coming up with Oregon State, USC, and Oregon in the next 4 weeks. You see,
yeah,
coming
you know,
out.
I'm glad you brought that up because I forgot about him because I really haven't. I saw some of the Utah. I saw a couple of minutes of the Utah game. I was on a plane flipping around, so I didn't see a great deal. I thought he was close to coming back a month ago. So I don't know if they're just waiting, but. I would feel moderately optimistic, and I think if he does come back, I mean, first of all, the schedule is everything right now in the Pac-12 because people here aren't talking about it, but Washington appears to be the best team at the moment. Utah's a contender. We know what Oregon is. Southern Cal is fantastic. I mean, it is in terms of excitement, the Pac-12 has the best conference in America.
Oh, yeah, and it's ironic, you know, this is the going out season, and here we are with some of the best quarterbacks and some of the best teams they've ever had. So hopefully we end up in the dance.
I'll check with some people in Utah, see if we can get a better answer than the one I just gave you, which was unsatisfactory. We are back. Much more to come.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.